welcome to Season 7 of Tell Me a Story I Don't Know, a fascinating journey into the lives of top sports personalities and their connections to Chicago. They reveal entertaining, memorable, and emotional stories many you've never heard before. I'm your host, George Hoffman, and please follow this podcast through our partnership with Sports Media Watch. You can find them and this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell Me a Story I Don't Know is proudly presented by Mr. Duct, Chicagoland's premier comprehensive air duct cleaning and ventilation for residential and commercial properties. They're upfront and honest. Find them on the web at MrDuctCleaning.com. This week, we feature part one with a great Chicago Blackhawks defenseman and Hall of Famer, Chris Chelios.
I mean, who couldn't get excited playing for the, you know, in front of that crowd in the old stadium that walk up the stairs? And, you know, we had a really intimidating team, you know, big, tough team. And that was what Keenan and Daryl Sutter kind of encouraged that. We were very undisciplined. But you ask any team that would come into our building, they hated it.
Chris Chelios is a free spirit. He's not shy when it comes to a challenge. Consider he played until he was 48, 28 years, amassing 3 Stanley Cups, 3 Norris Trophies, and respect from everyone he played for and against. He's currently an NHL analyst while making time to see myriad sporting events and spending downtime, whatever that means, with some famous friends, along with his family, which includes daughter Kaylee, herself an NHL analyst. Growing up in Chicago, you might think Chelios idolized hockey players, but that's not the case. So, Chris Chelios, Chelly, tell me a story I don't know.
Well, it'd have to be Dick Butkus, because every kid in my neighborhood where I grew up in the South Side wanted to be Dick Butkus. I actually had a football game called Dick Butkus. It was basically kill a guy with the ball. But yeah, you know, he was just, I love the Bears. My parents, we always, you know, look forward to those Sunday games. And he was an icon, you know, along with, I didn't get a chance to see Gale Sayers, as not as much Dick Butkus either, but a few more years. But yeah, and then down the road, eventually ended up, you know, ironically, you know, I found a place in Malibu, and he had moved there, you know, not, you know, long after he'd retired. So he's been out in Malibu, California, and got an opportunity to meet him and become friends with him. And it's kind of like a childhood dream, I guess you'd say. It wasn't, you know, not that I didn't like Bobby Hull or Stan Mikita or the rest of the Hawks, but Butkus was my guy.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Hull and Mikita, because I grew up, I'm a few years older than you are, and I grew up and it was like Hull and Mikita, because I was a big hockey fan, Ernie Banks with the Cubs, but you loved it, Dick Butkus. And I would wonder if you were nervous when you first met him.
I was. He's very intimidating. and once you get to know him, he's a totally different personality. He really like tries to be funny. But yeah, he was as big, you know, almost looked like he was as big as he was, you know, 20 years after retirement, is when he played. And, when I first met him, it was at a golf tournament in Chicago. They had the 86 Bears team, and then they had, you know, all the defensive linemen from, you know, Dick Butkus, Zero Bradovich, Buffon. I'm remiss. I can't remember a lot of them, but they sized up just as big as McMichael and Hampton and the rest of those guys. He's a pretty intimidating guy. And like I said, he's a straight shooter. If you piss him off, he'll let you know. But just like I said, he's became a really good friend, and his family and his wife, Helen, who I guess a high school sweetheart. But again, it's always good to see him when I travel out west, and he lives literally 7 minutes away from me. So it's really convenient to go have lunch or dinner with him.
You know, the first thing I think of when I think of you is longevity. And you played until you were 48. Why did you play that long? And was there a time before that that you said to yourself, enough was enough?
The closest I got was really at the end of my, you know, career with Chicago. I think I was 38, 39. And things weren't going well for our team, you know, around that transition of becoming like a rebuild. And I struggled that year, the last year there. We didn't make the playoffs, or we were on the verge of not making the playoffs. And I wasn't that guy that could play 30 minutes anymore and carry a team. And it's similar, really similar to what happened with Duncan Keith, quite honestly, watching him towards the end. And I still think Edmonton, misused him. They played him way too much. You know, he could have been a second power play unit guy, played against the other team's third and fourth line, but Edmonton didn't have the depth. You know, I was fortunate. You know, I played in Detroit, had a great team. They had just won two cups, and I just fit in nicely. And, you know, that's why I was able to play so long. I didn't have to uproot my family for the last 10 years of my career, sticking with one team. So that had most to do with it, just being on a great team. And, of course, you know, staying relatively healthy and not, you know, suffering any real significant injuries that, you know, would end your career.
Well, that takes a great deal of luck. And so I wonder what you think of some of these people I'm going to mention to you. First, Tom Brady.
Brady. Pump. Brady rifles to the corner. Oh, it's caught. Touchdown. Brandon Cooks. Incredible. Tom Brady delivers in the clutch.
Well, I don't think anybody wants to be the guy that takes out Tom Brady. So he's got that luxury and he's earned it for sure. There's no question he takes care of himself. He's fitness, you know, first guy to the field, last guy to leave. But it's a different sport. And, you know, back in the day, you know, use Wayne Gretzky for an example, there are guys that went after him, you know, he had guys to protect him, but that didn't really do him any good in the playoffs. And, you know, if it's me and I'm playing against Tom Brady, you know, especially in the playoffs, or, you know, first thing I'm going to do is take a 15-yard penalty on Tom Brady and rattle him. But, you know, no one seems to want to be that guy. And he's smart. Obviously, he doesn't put himself in real tough situations. But, I mean, if I look back, I always thought, you know, Michael Jordan, there's no question, in my opinion, he's the greatest athlete ever. But I got to, you know, put Brady with him now after what he's accomplished. He's just – it's a year in and year out. He just dominates and remains healthy.
I have to believe you admire him, if for no other reason, that he's still playing at age 45.
Yeah, and he comes out and has a – you know, everybody's waiting for him to see his decline and his – you know, and it's just not happening. But I cheer for those old guys. You know, I'm looking at Zdeno Chara. I don't think he's made a decision – whether he's going to continue to play yet or not, but it's amazing, especially a guy his size, how he's managed to, you know, play as long as he did. And the best thing about him is he's such a great team guy, and all his teammates have nothing to but good things to say about him. So that's always nice too. So, you know, Brady's, you know, he took less money over the years to build guys and surround himself with better players to allow that cap space for that. So, like I said, it's fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to watching his season, how it goes this year without Gronkowski.
How about a guy like Jaromir Jagr?
Jaromir Jagr, those powerful strides down the wing. Jagr hits the brakes. Curling drags beautifully past Tomander. Jagr, score! There's one that brings you out of your seat.
Ah. Unbelievable skill, but he bought his own team in Europe. And I don't know if he's still playing, but that's pretty good. You have that luxury of buying a team and then playing on that team. So no one has much say. But he's another kid, very serious the way he trained. I mean, he started in 91. He was like 20. Yeah, so he's got to be closing in on 50. I don't know how effective is he, but it's a different game over there. There's no hitting, you know, over in that league over there. You just kind of play offense. So quite honestly, at 60, I can go play forward there and, you know, get 10 goals a year, you know.
Watch it. Don't do it.
No, I'm not going to. But like I said, it's not real competitive. But I mean, he obviously loves playing, and so what? You know, I'm sure the crowd loves watching him out there, you know, and what he's done over the course of his career. I just saw those stats of goal scoring and Ovechkin, you know, closing in on the next two guys. So he was a heck of a player, Jagr. Really, really fun to watch.
What about the Iron Man of all time, perhaps, Gordie Howe, who played into his 50s?
Number nine. Big Father Time still doing his thing out here, and they're going to give him a standing ovation here in the Montreal Forum.
A tremendous tribute to one of the most amazing athletes in any sport.
Yeah, I mean, and he scored 20-something goals, I believe 20 or 20-something goals at 52 for his last year in the Hartford. So it's not like he was just taking a spot. He was still pretty – to score that many goals at that age is crazy. And then I thought it was kind of a shame, Patrick Marleau just stuck around to break his record. I wasn't a fan of that. But he's still, for me, you compare the great players, Gretzky, Howe, Messier and so on. But when you're great. It's just different times, different eras. But no one better than Gordie Howe, that's for sure. Gretzky as good, but I just don't think no one was ever better than Gordie Howe.
Well, he was also considered the toughest guy, too.
Oh, he was a monster. Like, for that years, the late 50s, 60s, early 70s, Gordie, you look at guys like Bobby Hull, Ted Lindsay, very small in stature, but Gordie, easily 6'2", thick, and, didn't fight a whole lot, but he was dirty as they come, and those elbows he was known for. It looked like someone go to hit him, and all of a sudden they're laying on the ice because Gordie just stuck his elbow on their chin and knocked him out. But he was a big, big guy for that time when he played.
Did your family ever say to you, Chris, hang him up?
No.
Really?
No. My dad and my mom worried a little bit like any other mother, but my dad, he enjoyed every minute, from when I started playing youth hockey to the end when I played for the Chicago Wolves. He didn't miss a game. It was pretty entertaining, and that's something like I enjoyed that my friends and family could, get to see me play that long, and especially your parents, it gives them something to look forward to, every game day and staying. I mean, it was just a big part of their lives as it was mine to be able to, travel and go to the games and watch the playoffs. So, and like any fan, but especially as a parent.
There are not many players, Chelly, who played for the three original six teams. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any at the moment. I'm sure there were a few. You did, and you played in the Stanley Cup Finals for all three. You won with the Canadiens and the Red Wings, and you lost with the Blackhawks. I'd like to think this is not a coincidence.
No, that was meant to be. And obviously, in a perfect world, it would have been great to win that, win the cup with Chicago, my hometown, especially '91 when we lost to Pittsburgh.
Gauthier gets it off the board. Chelios hits the point. Hindo hit the post. This is Bert Graham out of the corner. 5 seconds left. Larmer looks for somebody in front. One last chance. Chelios, not enough time. It's all over. The Pittsburgh Penguins have repeated as Stanley Cup champs.
But like I said, there's a lot of history in those teams, obviously, and expectations, especially when I broke in with Montreal because of the success that organization's had over the years. Tried to play for the Rangers a couple times, but the coaches, because of my past history of the teams they played for, Terry O'Reilly hated me when he played with Boston and I played for Montreal, so he didn't want nothing to do with me when I tried to go to the Rangers. And the next go around, it was Tortorella. And we had a little bit of a history, not much. I liked John, because he was American and hard-nosed guy, but he wanted to run that room and his team. And I think he was threatened by, at that point in my career, a veteran coming in like that, maybe affecting what his plan was. So, but yeah, to play for three teams and especially be able to play for Chicago, my home team, that's pretty special.
When's the last time you had your air ducts cleaned? Here's the best solution. Mr. Duct, a name Chicagoland has trusted for over 20 years. They work on your furnaces, air conditioners, and do repairs, maintenance, and installations. In other words, they're your all-around company for air quality choice and more. Mr. Duct provides on-site commercial ventilation cleaning estimates. You'd be hard-pressed to find better. So give them a call at 888-4-MR-DUCT. That's 888-467-3828. And Mr. Duct is the right choice to clean your residential dryer vents. They do a full inspection to make sure your dryers are running properly. Mr. Duct works with schools, health facilities, and office buildings to make sure you're breathing clean air. Their testimonials are endless, and with good reason. So don't think twice when you're ready to work on air ducts, dry vents, and so much more. Just think Mr. Duct, 888-4-MR-DUCT. That's 888-467-3828. And find them on the web at MrDuctCleaning.com.
We're growing up in Evergreen Park. I assume you were a big Blackhawks fan then and probably a sports nut the way you are now.
Yeah. I mean, baseball was my first love for sure. That was my sport. I pitched, and when I wasn't pitching, you know, I played shortstop and played a lot of, you know, club hockey, played for the state team 1 year. And it just worked well because it didn't interfere with hockey. Once baseball was over, you know, you rolled right into hockey. Football, couldn't do that. First of all, I was small, and it was too much of a conflict with hockey. But yeah, it's just, that seemed like, and you were able to play two sports back then. Even in high school, you could do that. And that's not, you know, not too many guys can do that now, with the schedules and the training. It's just too much, it interferes too much. But yeah, I mean, and when, you know, football, like I said, I loved it, but I was just like realistically too small, fast enough. But it's just like everybody in the neighborhood, you know, there seemed like I was grew up in that Evergreen Park, an Irish neighborhood. It seemed like every family had at least five or more kids in their family. So we were on the street every day, you know, playing something, you know, and we, like you said, we just rolled with the seasons.
Your dad owned a chain of Greek restaurants. I assume you ate well, but did you ever want to follow in his footsteps?
Yeah, not so much in the restaurants, because mom was an unbelievable cook. We weren't in the beginning anyway, when we were younger. There's five kids in our family, and my mom cooked every day, even if, you know, there's only two of us there. You know, we were running around doing our things, our sports, or, you know, scholastics. There was always a meal at 5-6 o'clock, and mostly Greek. You know, that's how we were raised. And yeah, my dad, he countless hours, you know, 18, 20 hour days in restaurants, bars. You know, he was a worker. And, you know, I can remember the first one was Maxime's, a pretty popular place downtown, the Blue Note. Blue Note over on Halstead, 103rd and Halstead, was one of his more successful nightclubs. And then it was a chain of like restaurants that didn't do so well. And that's, you know, not uncommon. It's 80% of those restaurants usually go out of business. But he had some good ones. He had some bad ones. And then, you know, when I was fortunate enough to get back to the Blackhawks in 91, the first thing I did was buy that place on Madison and let my family run it. I had my mom, my dad, my three sisters run, you know, working there. So it's been in our blood from day one, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, and sometimes aggravating. But, you know, it kept the family together, even though you would, you know, fight sometimes about it. But it was great. And to interact with the fans, obviously, I was very approachable in the bars. The players went there, and I think that's what the fans enjoyed the most, was being able to go down to the, you know, bar after the game and run into some of the players.
You're talking about Chili's Chili Bar, which you had here and in Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I basically, you know, the same thing I had in Chicago and Madison, I did the same thing in Detroit, right next to Comerica Park, the ball field and Ford Field. And Joe Louis was only about, you know, a mile away. So, and again, it's pretty special when you can go to the bar and, you know, the athletes are very approachable and interactive with the fans, and that's a pretty special thing. So I, you know, luckily in Detroit, we got to bring the cup to the bar. That was, you know, never forget that week, actually, that we had the cup in town, and passing that thing around. Like I said, the only regret is I wish I'd have done it in Chicago. You know, I bring the cup to Chicago, but with the wrong team, unfortunately. So, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun in that business. And I'm glad I didn't have to rely on it for a living, because it is really a tough business.
You played hockey as a kid, and then you moved to San Diego. I think it was in high school, but you didn't do very well in hockey. Matter of fact, weren't you ready to quit?
I didn't want to quit. I was nowhere else to play. And I actually got cut from a couple teams when I was first year out of high school. And I did that, you know, go to Canada, try for a team. I got cut. That was actually my senior year of high school. And then I had to come back and play catch up just to graduate. I actually didn't end up graduating till that summer. But no, it's, you know, and even after I was done that next year, I think I was out of hockey for about, you know, 2 months, and I'd gone to college to this USIU. It was called United States International University. It was their first year of the hockey program, but they had promised so many scholarships, and I tried to walk on. And unfortunately, I wasn't even good enough, but I got mono at the same time. So my career was basically over when I was 17 years old. And then right place, right time. I run into a kid on the beach in La Jolla, that's out in California, in San Diego, as I was surfing. And it just happened to be one of the kids that was playing on the college team and down in San Diego. He gave me the phone number of the coach in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. I made the call and he flew me up, and the rest was history. So just like I said, just a fluke that I ended up, where I did.
You wound up playing on the 1984 U.S. Olympic team along with Eddie Olczyk. So he's drafted third in the first round by the Blackhawks. You're drafted 40th by the Canadiens. When you look back, do you wish it was the Blackhawks who drafted you?
I say I wished it was, but that's a perfect example. Eddie being a young kid, going home, the distractions, your family, everybody's around. And I think sometimes it might have been better for Eddie to if he'd have got drafted by another team, and he didn't have all that added pressure. So it worked out great for me, because when I got drafted, I was a little disappointed. But then, being Montreal, the history of that team, and they weren't very good when I got drafted and joined the team. They're a fourth place team, just struggling to make the playoffs. But I think, it worked out great for me to go there and learn from the best players, Bobby, Gainey, Larry Robinson, Guy Lafleur. I always said it was like getting a Harvard degree. And Eddie, he kind of got thrown into the fire there, a lot of pressure on him being a hometown kid. And, by the time I got back home to Chicago and I was 29 years old. So it was perfect time for me to go back, and I had the experience of playing in Montreal, and it didn't affect me one bit going home and having to deal with all my friends and family. So, there's pros and cons to that. But like I said, I don't think it worked out great for Eddie. It was a lot of pressure for a hometown kid, especially, I think he was, 18.
If you want to hear more great guests on Tell Me a Story I Don't Know, all you have to do is go to Sports Media Watch on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the many interviews we've done dating back to January of 2021.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We return with Chris Chelios on Tell Me a Story I Don't Know.
You did very well, as you said, in Montreal. You won a Stanley Cup. You won a couple of Norris trophies. We all grew up watching the Habs. What was it like playing and living in Montreal?
I'd never been there other than a few years prior to that, I went and tried out for a team there, but I was only there for a week and I got cut. But we were outside of the city in a town called Hawkesbury, which was all French, no English speaking, but unbelievable culture. It was like being in Europe. If you're downtown, everybody spoke French and English, so that wasn't an issue. The media, kind of tough because they were having those problems about trying to separate from Canada, Quebec at the time.
Yes.
And it wasn't necessarily an American French thing. It was an English French thing. So I'd never seen so many people that didn't like Montreal or cheered against the Canadians because they didn't, because of what was going on politically. So, but again, fans, very knowledgeable. My first 13 games, I was terrible, had no confidence. Fans were all over you every time you missed a pass or made a mistake. So it was tough, but, you know, you got to have thick skin. Thank God I couldn't read the French papers. you know, I played the 13 games regular season after the Olympics, and it's like the light went on or the switch, you know, went on. And my first game, I scored a goal, and all of a sudden I got my confidence and, you know, started playing like I had, you know, in Olympics and in college. So I just, whatever it was, you know, I went from a real scared player to, you know, very, very confident player overnight. And we ended up, you know, making a pretty good run in the playoffs, losing to the Islanders in the semifinals. And then next year, it just carried over into the next year. I went on to have a really good rookie season with Tom Kervers. And, you know, and then I kind of figured I was good. I was packing my bags, you know, those last 13 games I played the first year, thinking I'm going to be in the American League for a while. But, you know, I was there to stay, you know, after that first year in Montreal.
So then comes June 30th, 1990, and one of the biggest trades really in NHL history. You were sent to the Blackhawks for Dennis Savard. Take me back to that day, Chelly. Did you have an inkling this would happen?
It's either usually in Montreal, if you got an early exit in the playoffs or you have a tough year as a team, either the coach goes or a player goes or players go. So it was just it was time for players. And P and Pat Burns got along great. He was a heck of a coach, and you know, I really respected him. We got along unbelievably. But the media was tough on me. You know, I was the captain of the team, a lot of pressure on that being an American captain. And it all played into it. I still was shocked because Serge Savard was the general manager at that time.
It's definitely a shocker. I'm still a little bit shocked at the move. I still think I've got to start playing before I realize that I'm on the Hawks and I'm playing for a different team. But I'm excited about going home, and I'm really excited about playing for the Hawks.
There's a lot of pressure on him to do something, and I believe it was the president of the team, Ronald Corey, there, you know, talked about being a French-Canadian, you know, team. And, you know, Danny Savard was a, you know, to get traded for him, and he's obviously one of the most, you know, popular players ever to play for the Blackhawks, along with Bobby Hall and Mikita and Tony and those guys. But he, you know, he had his issues with Keenan. So it was either going to go to Winnipeg for Howard Chuck or to Chicago for Danny Savard. And I thank my lucky stars that, you know, Chicago is where I went. And Serge Savard told me that on the phone call when he traded me, that, you know, he did me a favor, and he did. And I thank him for it, for, you know, trading. I wanted to play my whole career in Montreal, but, you know, things happened, and it couldn't have worked out any better the way things did my first few years, especially when I came back to the Hawks. It was great, and great to see friends and coaches and all the, you know, the people that you know, were responsible for me, you know, making it to the NHL that were from Chicago.
What was that like for you to come home and play in front of the crowd at the stadium? And that had to be an incredible jolt.
Yeah, no better building. And I had my mind made up. First game, I was going to get a goal.
Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots, deflected, score! It's a 4-1 Chicago lead. Chelios gets the goal. I think it deflected off a Ranger stick into the net. Chelios now with a goal and two assists.
Get an assist and get in a fight, and that's just exactly what I did.
So you did?
I got the Gordie Howe in my first game. Yeah, it was amazing. So, but yeah, I mean, who couldn't get excited playing for the, you know, in front of that crowd in the old stadium, that walk up the stairs, and, you know, we had a really intimidating team, you know, big, tough team, and that was what Keenan and Daryl Sutter kind of encouraged that. We were very undisciplined. But you ask any team that would come into our building, they hated it, you know, couldn't wait for it to be over with. But, you know, that whole division, Minnesota, Detroit, you know, St. Louis, everybody had their tough guys. But, you know, it was a heck of a time, and I really enjoyed that style of hockey. And, you know, like I said, it couldn't have gone any better. We won the President's, you know, trophy that first year I was there. And disappointing playoff, you know, again, because we were a very undisciplined team, took a lot of penalties against Minnesota and lost in the first round. But But, you know, we made battle back and made it to the finals that next year. So it was, like I said, a lot of fun, never a dull moment with, you know, Mike Keenan and Daryl Sutter.
Well, I remember it well because I covered just about every home game there was. And of course, you were swept by a pretty emerging team with Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr and the Penguins. But what was it like playing under Keenan?
Never a dull moment.
Mike Keenan is over to the timekeeper. And he is trying to assault him. Mike Keenan. They have to restrain him. He is so mad.
He was hard on guys. You know, I could take it, you know, I guess you'd call it tough love. Usually when he was all over me, I deserved it to, you know, that was his thing to motivate you. And he was hard on the third, fourth line guys a lot, you know, guys like Brian Noonan, Mike Hudson, Larms. He took it, not that Larms was the third or fourth line guy, but they butt heads, and he just tried to push those buttons. But, you know, say what you want. He took those guys, and when he got, you know, the job at New York for the Rangers, he took Larmer, Stephane Matteau, Noonan, Hudson with him. They won a cup. Then when he got fired, he went to Vancouver. I don't think he got fired. He actually went and signed with Vancouver, did the same thing. He took those guys with him, and, you know, he pretty loyal. He just a little bit psychotic for sure. There's no question. you know, I think his biggest problem was he wanted to be the GM. And, you know, he went after Pulford's job, and the same thing happened to him in Florida. And then I don't know what happened in Russia. He was the first coach, North American coach, to win the championship there. And then they fired him right after that. So, you know, we keep in touch constantly. And I really enjoy Mike. He's a great person. But like any, you know, like a player, he gets on that ice and that, you know, he get that something switches in their brain, and they just can't control themselves. And that was Mike Keenan. But he fit into, you know, perfectly to what the Chicago Blackhawks were at that time.
Well, think about some of the players that you played with here. Jeremy Roenick, Eddie Belfour, Stu Grimson, Troy Murray, Tony Amonte. This was quite a group.
Yeah, we were there. You know, just that, you know, unfortunately, Randy and Mario Lemieux, Ron Francis, Jaromir Jagr, you know, Larry Murphy, a lot of Hall of Famers. And we were competitive for a while. We just, you know, we had the goalie in Eddie Belfour. You know, Pittsburgh had Barrasso that year, and he ended up, you know, he was obviously a Hall of Famer also. But I really thought Eddie, you know, would have carried us to the promised land, and not that it was anything to do with Eddie that we lost, but, you know, Eddie went on to win that cup in Dallas and really had a really good stint in Toronto. We had all the pieces. We just, you know, that year, you know, we were up in that first game, 3-1, let the lead go. That Jagr goal haunts me forever, that he skated through all four guys on the ice and to tie it. But, you know, then we never really regained our confidence after that game. But the great players, great teammates.
Special thanks to CBS, the NHL Network, NBC, and Madison Square Garden Productions for those memorable highlights. My thanks, as always, to the people behind the scenes that helped make this wonderful podcast possible. TJ Reeves for putting us on the map, Will Hansel for his crafty editing, and Nick Tocci for our wonderful graphics. And to our presenting sponsor, Mr. Duck. You can find them at MrDuck.com. Tune in next week when we feature part two with Chris Chelios on Tell Me a Story I Don't Know. I'm George Hoffman, and that's All She Wrote.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.